Well, when you hear that someone is a throwback to a different era, it's usually intended as a criticism, isn't it? However, in the case of George H.W. Bush, America's 41st president and father of his 43rd, it's really a compliment. You see, Bush Sr. was the last president to grasp the complexities of foreign policy, in my judgment. He represented fiscal discipline that helped America on the path back to balanced budgets. Moreover, he was by temperament a man of the middle in what has become an age of increasing ideological polarization. Here's a Wall Street Journal editorial this week, quote, "A gentleman in a culture growing cruder by the year." Bush also had a resume unlike today's career politicians. I mean, Navy pilot in World War II, oil man, special envoy to China, UN ambassador, CIA director, congressman, vice president, president. Well, someone who caught the historical significance of George Bush Sr. early on is my next guest. Nearly two decades ago, Jonathan Rauch wrote a cover story for The New Republic, back then Washington's leading liberal political magazine, and the title, Father Superior, Our Greatest Modern President. Now, Jonathan is the author of The Happiness Curve, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him back to Between the Lines. Hi there, Jonathan.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be back.
When Bush was president in 89-93, he had no shortage of critics. Liberals dismissed him as a wimp. Intellectuals ridiculed his sentence fragments and jumbled syntax. And even conservatives detested him for not just rising taxes, but losing to Bill Clinton. Why then do you rate Bush so highly?
Bush was a problem solver. If not for him, Ronald Reagan's presidency would have looked like a semi-failure, and Bill Clinton might well have failed. He cleaned up the messes that Reagan left behind, and he left a healthy situation for Bill Clinton to build on, and he got punished for doing it. Kind of typical of his generation and the kinds of constructive attitudes that they had.
He was always known as a foreign policy president, and of course he's praised for his handling of the collapse of the Soviet Union. Yet at the time, Bush was widely criticized for not embracing democracy, national self-determination.
Bush was a man of restraint, and of course he was ridiculed for that. You know, it wouldn't be prudent and so on. But he turned out to be right. He was very careful not to rub the Russians' face in the collapse of the Soviet Empire, give them room to adjust. And in fact, ending the Cold War with Germany and NATO was darn near miraculous. Thatcher, for example, said, don't even try it. It can't be done. And same thing with the economy. He was careful not to go overboard with stimulus. He understood that it was too late in 1992. He was careful not to invade Iraq and occupy Baghdad. He knew that that would be a disaster. Again and again, he proved his critics wrong.
It's interesting because after the US-led victory in the Persian Gulf, there were many critics. Paul Keating, our former prime minister, was one among many who expressed disappointment at the failure to finish Saddam off. Bush didn't cop that criticism after his son invaded Iraq, did he?
No, that's exactly right. And it's, you know, it's not just that the man was cautious, you know, this kind of negative virtue of caution. He also had the positive virtue of being able to wade into these very complicated, difficult situations and somehow get the problem solved. He brokered a compromise that broke the back of the U.S. federal budget deficit, made possible balanced budget surpluses. A few years later, he did that, working with Republicans and Democrats. It cost him the support of his party, but it was a huge thing to do. He solved the savings and loan crisis, which was the biggest financial meltdown until the one in 2008. Very, very serious, very dangerous. We've forgotten about it. Probably Australians don't even know about it because he solved it so well. He dealt with the open sore in Nicaragua, which Reagan had left. One thing after another, he would just go in and deal with it like a grown-up.
My guest is Jonathan Rauch from the Brookings Institution in Washington. He's also the author of The Happiness Curve. We had a segment earlier this year on that subject. And we're chatting about the great modern US President George H.W. Bush, who died last weekend at age 94. Jonathan, you obviously praise Bush's prudence and pragmatism. How does he compare to, say, his Republican successors? There are a whole bunch of them. I think of the Newt Gingrich revolutionaries who want to slash the size and the scope of the federal government, the George W. Bush neoconservatives who want to democratize the world. And then there are the Trump populists, America First and all that. How does Bush Sr. compare to his successes?
Oh, he's so different in so many ways, Tom. Where does one begin? The first thing to say is that he could not be elected dog catcher. I mean, literally, he would not be a serious candidate for high national office. He would be considered what's known over here as a rhino, a Republican in name only. So first of all, the difference is temperamental. He was not a populist. He was an elitist. He was someone who understood that he was fortunate and believed in giving back. He valued expertise. He valued wisdom. He was, in fact, his own Secretary of State working the phones, and he understood that there was no substitute for knowledge. He had deep experience in government, something Republicans now reject. It turns out now that in both parties in the U.S., but even more Republicans than Democrats, experience is seen as a disqualification because it makes you part of the swamp.
Okay, well, on that note, a quick quiz question for you. Whom did George H.W. Bush vote for in 2016?
Well, I don't know that we know that, but we know he didn't vote for Donald Trump.
Yeah, I read the other day in the press that he voted. Well, that's true, but I believe he actually voted for Hillary Clinton and his son abstained. Fascinating.
Yeah, well, fascinating indeed. I mean, he much more resembles Hillary Clinton, someone else who comes along with a deep resume in government and lots of proven skills, but is not a very good campaigner, not good at connecting, has many of the same faults.
Okay, well, what about his sense of decency? Let's get your reaction to the handwritten letter that Bush wrote for his successor and opponent, Bill Clinton. This was on the day of the January 20, 1993 inauguration. By the way, I happened to attend that inauguration. It was one of the best moments of my life. This is an NPR voiceover.
Dear Bill, when I walked into this office just now, I felt the same sense of wonder and respect that I felt 4 years ago. I know you will feel that too. I wish you great happiness here. I never felt the loneliness some presidents have described. There will be very tough times, made even more difficult by criticism you may not think is fair. I'm not a very good one to give advice, but just don't let the critics discourage you or push you off course. You will be our president when you read this note. I wish you well. I wish your family well. Your success now is our country's success. I'm rooting hard for you. Good luck, George.
Well, it was George H.W. Bush's handwritten letter to his opponent and successor, Bill Clinton, on the day of the transfer of power in 1993. That was an NPR voiceover. Jonathan Rauch.
It's a beautiful note, isn't it? And it's not just beautiful because it shows the man's personal decency, which he was well known for. He had his flaws. He ran an appalling campaign in 1988. But he was known for his decency. But it goes deeper than that because you can see from the letter, he regards that kind of decency as patriotic duty. He thinks it's his duty to support a president of the opposite party who's coming in and taking over in a very hard-fought election. That's so far from where we are today, where people think that being polarized and beating up on the other side is your patriotic duty.
I mentioned the Wall Street Journal editorial in my introduction. Let me conclude with it. Quote, a gentleman in a culture growing cruder by the year and a man of admirable private and public character who believed in government service for the good of the country and not merely for power. Jonathan, always great to spend time with you, mate. Thank you so much for being on RN.
Thank you, Tom.
Jonathan Rauch, he's author of The Happiness Curve and a scholar with the Brookings Institution in Washington.